You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The National Security Strategy, published these last days, much to interpret. And Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host, and we're eager to hear from Steve Yates of the Heritage Foundation with regard to the NSS and East Asia. The threat is East Asia, not only in trade, not only in culture, but also kinetic warfare. Steve, a very good day to you. You read, especially with your background, the East Asia part of the National Security Strategy. What surprises you? What disappoints you? What is fresh? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. I think the new twist in the National Security Strategy just reflects the reality of recent experience. It's the first time in my memory that a document focused this clearly on East Asia's first island chain and second island chain as strategically important, but also at the center of America's deterrence equation. For generations, frankly, we have looked at a Taiwan Strait contingency in an isolated U.S.-China kind of framework, looking perhaps at Taiwan's political change versus China's threat of use of force. But the recent bullying of Japan, the Philippines, that has provoked a strategic response from both of those countries, I think animates this new defined strategy with balancing roles and responsibilities up and down that island chain that, frankly, should complicate Beijing's calculus.
By bullying, you mean the intemperate remarks saying they'll cut the head off of the new prime minister of Tokyo? Is that bullying?
Of course, there's no shortage of wolf warrior political warfare in what Beijing has been doing quite a lot of in recent times. But it's actually more than that, because they have the actual material threat of civilian and military craft, which really are what we'd say gray zone, because it's blended capabilities that have challenged the sovereign rights of Japan, the Philippines, and of course, Taiwan. So this is increasingly seen as linked. It's not just internal Chinese politics. This is global security, and not least of which has been emphasized that 50% of global container traffic transits these strategic waterways. And so it's not simply a matter of Chinese people's feelings or the CCP's ideology. This is something that is pressing economic and national security, national interests, not just for that island chain, but for a lot of the rest of us.
Gordon, you have a comment and question for Steve.
Steve, I want to pick up on your comment and observation about the first island chain words in the national security strategy. Many people have focused in on the strategy's failure to name China as a threat, as the Biden administration had done, and the Trump administration hasn't done. But when you read through the 29 pages of the NSS, you see a lot of references to hostile powers and descriptions that can only fit China. So you talk about the South China Sea. The NSS talks about a hostile power being able to close off the South China Sea or to impose tolls. And as far as I can tell, there's only one nation that fits that description, and that's China. And that's not the only one sprinkled throughout the NSS. It seems to me, and I'd like to get your comment on this, in that the Trump administration is a little bit afraid of angering China, but it's not afraid of countering China. Your comment.
Well, Gordon, I agree that there's a little bit of a disjuncture in words and deeds in a certain sense. And I think that in the Biden years, there was an overemphasis on the words, while I think that there was material requirements to bolster capabilities and deterrence. And so I do see that in this national security strategy and in the execution of policy, there are real moves that will bolster the capabilities of our allies, the interoperability and cooperation among our partners and allies, whether the United States is directly involved or not. I see all of that as a net advantage to deterrence and a net complication for Beijing. And so if I had to choose, and I'd rather not have to choose, if I have to have weaker words and stronger actions, that's where I'd rather be. But I would love it if we finally got to a place where we could just speak truth openly and have our actions match or exceed those words.
Japan, is that a special category that lives rent-free in the brains of the leadership in China? Is that something that they're forever refighting in their brain, their mind's eye? 1937, the attack in Shanghai, the humiliation of the national government. Do they talk about it, or is this something that I'm imposing because I've read from the outside?
Well, John, this is an obsession for the Communist Party of China. It is a painful one for a lot of reasons for people like me, because I do not give any credit to the Chinese Communist Party for resisting the Japanese invasion or playing any decisive role in the outcome of World War II. And yet they have drafted on the sacrifice of many, many others to engage in their nonstop political warfare. And so for the communist political warfare machine to work, they have to have boogeymen. And I think that Japan, as an imperialist power of that era 90 plus years ago, that is one of their very preferred tools to bludgeon others with. The United States features into it from time to time. But this is borderline obsession. Of course, it's completely unfair to judge the Japan of 2025 by the standards of Japan of the 1930s.
Gordon, you have a question.
So, Steve, my sense is that the Chinese Communist Party propaganda, which sometimes can be very, very effective, has just sort of lost the cue cards, because we're seeing a lot of emphasis on Japan, as you say, of the 1930s, calling Japan militarist. And people can see that the Japan of today is a peaceful society, one that would just like to just get along with everybody. My sense is that China's overdone it this time, but I'm not sure. When you look at the wider world, how do you see the messaging that the Communist Party has on Japan? And is it actually effective today elsewhere?
I've seen a similar trend line as you have, Gordon, and there was a time in the 80s and 90s where a lot of this rhetoric would resonate in Southeast Asia a bit more. It would resonate, frankly, in some American quarters because, of course, World War II was a painful experience for a lot of Americans, and the Greatest Generation made a tremendous sacrifice. But as time has gone on, they see Japan as having been the defining example of a responsible stakeholder, and it's been China that has unleashed viruses and poisons and is encroaching on people's territory. And so for the nations of Southeast Asia, this talk of World War II just doesn't resonate when there's only one power whose ships are taking territory near their shores and sort of forcing them into more of a subservient relationship. And the talk of America trying to put them into a subservient relationship really doesn't resonate in the era of the Trump form of diplomacy, other than America just saying, will you please invest more in your own defense rather than relying entirely on us? And so that's the mix it's falling into. And I do think these echoes of World War II just are not landing the way they used to.
Stephen Yates of the Heritage Foundation commenting on the national security strategy and the defense of Taiwan and the fate of the people of East Asia. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.